This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is The Case Against George W. Bush by Stephen C. Markoff, with a foreword by Richard Clark. This is from the foreword. For some Americans, George W. Bush looks good by comparison to the incumbent, Donald Trump. In his post-presidency, Bush has devoted himself to worthy causes and acted in a bipartisan manner. The 43rd president should, however, be judged not by comparison to America's worst president, nor by what Bush may have done after leaving office. He should be evaluated for his actions in office, his nonfeasance, misfeasance, and malfeasance. This volume from Stephen Markoff provides the evidence for such an evaluation. You can judge for yourself. For me, there is little doubt. I, unfortunately, witnessed Bush and his administration make many of their most cataclysmic decisions. I was in the room when some of them occurred. When in December 2000, the Supreme Court of the United States decided on a 5-4 vote that George W. Bush would become the 43rd president, I was the special assistant to the president for national security and national coordinator for security and counterterrorism for President William J. Clinton. I anticipated leaving the White House on January 20th, 2001, when the Clinton presidency ended. However, I was asked by the incoming administration to stay on for an unspecified period because, as it was explained to me, there was no one on Bush's incoming team who knew much about terrorism or who wanted my job. Departing Clinton administration officials stressed to the newly arriving Bush team and to Bush himself the importance and urgency of dealing with the al-Qaeda terrorist threat. Indeed, the Clinton administration had developed an extensive series of further steps to combat al-Qaeda that it would have taken had it continued in office, or indeed had Vice President Al Gore assumed office in 2001. Within days of Bush's inauguration, I asked for an urgent meeting at the cabinet level to review both the threat and the plan to ratchet up the measures against al-Qaeda. No such meeting occurred until a week before 9/11, and that meeting was inconclusive. From January 2001 through the second week in September, Bush personally received frequent intelligence warnings that al-Qaeda posed an imminent threat. He convened no meetings to address the issue. His inner circle of national security advisors did nothing, despite frequent urgings by the CIA director and the national coordinator, including such vivid imagery as our asking in writing that they consider a near future in which there would be hundreds of dead bodies in the streets of America. Instead, they focused on Iraq and the regime of Saddam Hussein. Bush's nonfeasance cost American lives. Following the deaths of over 3,000 innocent civilians on 9/11, the Bush administration attempted to tie the al-Qaeda attack to Iraq, which had nothing to do with it. Despite CIA and FBI analyses that reiterated Iraq's non-involvement, the Bush administration almost immediately followed the 9/11 attack by beginning to make plans to invade Iraq. Senior Bush officials spoke privately of the need to demonstrate our strength in the wake of the 9/11 attack, show our might by destroying the largest army in the Middle East, and thereby also prove our willingness to take U.S. military casualties to achieve our ends. Prior to 9/11, foreign terrorists who had attacked Americans had been successfully sought out throughout the world and arrested by U.S. law enforcement authorities, assisted by the intelligence community. Many terrorists had been returned to U.S. territory, given their Miranda rights, provided with counsel, tried in our civilian criminal courts, convicted, sentenced, and incarcerated in maximum security prison cells. One, tried by the Commonwealth of Virginia, was executed. Despite this record, the Bush administration abandoned criminal process and established its own extrajudicial system for dealing with terrorists post 9/11. That new system used techniques that any objective observer would judge were torture. Perhaps the most well-known torture technique was the procedure known as waterboarding. The United States government had tried World War II Japanese military personnel for using the exact same technique. They were found guilty, and some were executed by hanging. The United States Senate's Committee on Intelligence conducted the most extensive oversight and investigation and examination in its history on the issue of torture during the Bush administration. That voluminous study concluded that torture was employed and that it had not, despite administration claims to the contrary, uniquely revealed information that had prevented terrorist attacks. To the contrary, it showed that tortured prisoners, unable to satisfy their interrogators with information that the terrorists did not know, instead guessed at what kind of story would stop the torture, and then fabricated information of the kind they thought their prosecutors wanted to hear. Bush was not only aware of the torture, he approved it. His role in giving authorization for such acts can rightly be considered criminal malfeasance, as should his orders to invade Iraq. Among the many justifications the Bush administration considered for their invasion and occupation of Iraq, they chose finally to make the alleged weapons of mass destruction existence their chief complaint. The book, The Case Against George W. Bush by Stephen C. Markoff.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Alex Lawson, filling in for Tom, live from Netroots Nation in Philadelphia. And man, am I excited to speak with Lisa Graves, who is a personal hero of mine. It's just true. Lisa has a long and storied history as what I think is the